Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, welcome to Monster Legends Podcast, and hope you had a great weekend. This is Monster Legends of Montana with special guest Todd Sullivan. How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you doing tonight?
Doing great. What have you been up to?
Nothing much. It's been kind of slow here. I'm in Taipei, Taiwan, but it's Saturday, so Saturdays, like everywhere else in the world, tend to be pretty slow. So it's just been like a quiet Sunday day.
That's great. I've been hanging out with my girlfriend all weekend. That's all I've been doing. So what are you doing in Taipei?
I teach English here. I've been teaching here for the past 6-7 months. But I teach English in Asia, so I was in South Korea for 10 years. And then I went home for maybe 2 or 3 months, and then I came out here to Taipei.
How did you get to teaching in Taipei, in Asia, in Korea?
Just looking for work. Like, I graduated with a master's in writing, and honestly, if you graduate with a master's in writing, you're going to teach. It just depends on where you're going to teaching. And so the options were teaching basically in the school that I graduated from after I graduated, teaching in a public school system somewhere in America, or moving abroad and teaching. And I thought moving abroad teaching would be the best of those three choices. And it's been a really good time. That's why I've been doing it for so long. It's been pretty cool.
That's awesome. Oh, what got you to like be want to be a writer and learn to write? So.
It's just something you know, as a kid, you try different things, and writing was a thing that seems to that people thought I did well, and so I got a lot of compliments about it, and I just kept doing it. Definitely, the more compliments you get as a kid, that's probably the thing you end up doing more and more often than other things that don't seem to be as impressive to people. And so, people enjoy what I wrote even back in elementary school, and I just kept doing it throughout. I think I stopped writing for only maybe a year and a half, like around 7th grade, I stopped writing. And then I started again sometime in 8th grade, and I've been doing it ever since.
That's awesome. What was your like favorite book as a kid?
What was my favorite book as a kid? There are a lot of books, and when people ask me, well, let's put it this way. When I was in high school, what I read a lot of was Dragonlance. So I read a lot. Do you know Dragonlance by any chance?
I think I've heard of it. I've read it.
Yeah, it's part of the whole Dungeons and Dragons D&D type like fiction. But yeah, I read a lot of Dragonlance in high school, and that's probably the thing that anyone listening to this is gonna know. And there's other stuff that I read in elementary school. It's an old book called Searching for Sonya, Dragon the Guardian. But these books are just so old, and I'm pretty sure people aren't gonna know those titles. But Dragonlance is the thing that I read in high school.
I read House of the Scorpion in high school, and like the Inherent Cycle.
I read House of Scorpion.
You read the House of Scorpion?
Yeah, I did. I read it because I attended a National Book Program, a National Book Foundation writing camp, and that was one of the books they gave us for free, The House of Scorpion. So I actually did read that one. It's been a long time, but I did read
that one. Like, no one ever hears about it. I never heard anyone else have read it before. Like, it's so good. You ever read?
Yeah, me and my people who went to that camp, we all read that book. It was really good. So, yeah, cool.
I read your book this past week, man. It was so good. butchers.
Thank you.
Well, should need to make it to the movie or something, but I don't know if I can. It's kind of gruesome in some parts.
Yeah, it's an extreme horror. It's definitely a gruesome book. And yeah, I wish I could make it into a movie because that'd be a paycheck for me. But yeah, I mean, anime. I mean, that'd be cool.
Yeah, anime. Yeah, anime would be better.
Yeah, but it would be cool if they made it to anime like Spirits Away or Howl's Moving Castle or something like that.
Oh, you're talking about Studio Ghibli? Man, yeah. Their stuff is so good. I love their stuff.
Yeah, I actually went there in Japan, Tokyo.
What was that like? That's probably so awesome.
It was really cool. We went there, it was far from where we were staying. It wasn't close. And yeah, it was just like we have a smaller building. Like, you know, it's Japan, it's Asia. Things don't tend to be really big in Asia. So kind of a smaller building, a bit nondescript, but it was a really cool experience. They had a lot of the original drawings throughout the building, and you can watch. It was actually the first place I ever saw My Neighbor Totoro. Do you know that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. First time I ever saw that movie. We only saw a bit of it, but it was really cool, actually. I really, really love Japan and Tokyo. I want to live there at some point. This is like 11 years ago. I still haven't made it back there to live. But yeah, I really enjoy. Have you been to Japan?
Not yet. I want to.
Okay.
How's the culture there and the people?
Well, that's my first experience in Asia, so I was blown away by it. I was like, I mean, that's one of my best experiences. I was only there it was like a 3-week class I took there, and just everything about it, the airport, coming from the airport to where we were staying at this youth hostel, the vending machines, the people, the traffic, you know, in Japan, they do it on the other side of the street. And this, everything about it was there's just really big crows there, the sounds, it really is like stepping into anime, actually. And yeah, it's just a very, if you're into anime, if you're into Asian culture, then I think Japan is definitely a place you should visit. There's a lot of, it's a really fantastic experience for me.
I guess you can say like anime is really good at like capturing that culture and stuff like that, right?
Right, it is actually really good. Yeah, because you know, when you're in Japan, there's like a street of Dragon Ball Z. They're playing on the televisions, and then there are just all these Japanese people are just standing outside on the sidewalk watching Dragon Ball Z. It's a very unique, like I haven't been to a lot of places, but I have been to a few places. Japan is probably the top of my list of just really cool places to visit.
What's it like living in Korea?
It was cool. I was there for 10 years. So, I mean, you know, you don't do anything. Well, hopefully you don't do anything for 10 years you don't enjoy. But yeah. I lived all over Korea. Like, I started in a small little island called Jeju. I started in a small island called Jeju. And then I went from there up to Seoul, which is the big capital city. Yeah. And I lived all in between. And all my writing took place in Korea so far. Like, everything I've done and published. So Korea had a lot of stuff in it that I guess seeded my imagination. Because I didn't get anything published actually until I moved to Korea. And then after I moved to Korea for like 5 years, everything I submitted was accepted. So Korea was very good for me actually.
That's awesome.
As a writer.
So that's really cool. Is there anything from like living in Korea that like you put into your books somehow?
Yeah, Yeah, definitely.
Like something that inspired you, like just living there.
Yeah, you know, working there, like Butcher is kind of about work and a very difficult job. That's what the characters have. They are employed, because they are called employees in the book, and they just have a very difficult job. But, you know, again, I lived there for 10 years, so I did enjoy Korea, but definitely working there was they had its tough moments, because it's just like a cultural thing going on. And, you know, in Korea, they are very big on hierarchy. So there's like somebody at the top, and then there's someone beneath that person. And if you're like closer to the bottom, you have like no real authority. And so it's just, they're very big on hierarchy, and the person at the top being the one making decisions, and everyone else just kind of follows. And that's kind of, it can be kind of rigid and honestly not fun. So a lot of Butchers is about these people working in this corporation and having to follow these rules that seem abusive, definitely for them. But it's just like scaled up a lot.
Yeah. Show's about cryptids. Have you heard anything monster stories in Korea or Japan or anything like that?
Well, you know, my publisher, Nightmare Press, that's actually, he has like a couple of imprints, and the one that he started off with, I think it's called Anubis, and that's what he does. He does legends and monsters in America. And in fact, he runs a haunted tour in Kentucky. He has like a haunted tour in Kentucky. So that's actually what he does. Like on Facebook right now, he's putting all these images. He actually goes and takes pictures of the things, and he investigates it. He's like kind of a paranormal investigator. So yeah, that's actually what my publisher does. Yeah, I was thinking that too. I almost want to tell them that he should join us in the conversation, because you guys might have a lot to talk about. But I definitely will send him your contact information, because I think you guys will I don't know a lot about it.
Yeah.
I have several books he's done on this subject, so you guys will probably have a lot to talk about, actually.
Awesome. What's a good food in Korea?
The one everyone eats is kimchi. It's like pickled cabbage. Cabbage fat.
Yeah, I like cabbage.
Okay, then you really like it. They serve it with breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it's pickled, and it's like a red spicy sauce on it. But sometimes it's sweet too. And for many foreigners, when they first go there, they don't really like it, but they give it to you all the time, and you kind of acquire a taste for it. It makes the other food you eat taste better. So yeah, kimchi is one of the favorites there, and they're big on pork. A lot of chicken.
Pork and chicken, yeah. Sounds like a gravy down here in the south. Put gravy on everything.
Yeah, the kimchi goes with everything. Like sometimes they compare kimchi with bread, and I know in America we have this thing with bread, but I don't think it's like kimchi. Sit down without bread and still enjoy our meal, but they don't really sit down without kimchi. Like that's really essential. So I think bread is close, but not the same actually.
What do you have for breakfast?
Today? So I'm living in Taipei now, like I was saying, and things in Taipei actually open a bit late and they close a bit early. So I tend to get around 6 o'clock. Only thing that is open is actually 7-Eleven. You know 7-Eleven?
Yeah.
Yeah, but 7-Eleven is actually different here in Korea, Japan, and America. So yeah, basically for breakfast every day I have 7-Eleven, and then for a lot of times for dinner I have this thing called Family Mart. It's like a 7-Eleven, big competitors.
Are you like do you like waffles or pancakes?
Pancakes, they're more common. Yeah, there's a McDonald's actually nearby, and I get that sometimes. So yeah, pancakes is probably something I enjoy more.
Yeah, it's hard to find a good like good waffle. They're usually like frozen and awful. But pancakes are. Pancakes are always good. So about some monsters in Montana. First one is the Shunka Warriton, or Ring Duckus, is a cryptid first mentioned in American folklore. Those who got a good look at this beast described it as being nearly black and having high shoulders and a back that sloped downward like a hyena. The Hiaway and several other Native American Indian tribes in the region called the creature Shunka Warriton, which translates into carrying off dogs, because it was often sneaking to Indian camps at night to steal their dogs. The first documented sighting of the Shunka Warriton by white settlers began in the 1880s, which members of the Hutchins family settled down in the Madison River Valley in the lower part of Montana. Not long after the Hutchins settled into the area, they, along with several other locals, began to encounter a strange wolf-like animal. In its book, Trails to Nature's Mysteries, the Life of a Working Naturalist, published in 1997, Ross Hutchins wrote the following description of some encounters that his grandfather had with Shunka Warriton. One winter morning, my grandfather was aroused by the barking of dogs. He discovered that a wolf-like beast of dark color was chasing my grandmother's geese. He fired his gun at the animal, but missed. It ran off down the river, but several mornings later, it was seen again at about dawn. It was about seen several more times at the home ranch as well as other ranches 10 or 15 miles down the valley. Whatever it was a great traveler. Ring Duckus is the name given to the undivided animal shot by Israel Hutchins, a Mormon settler in Montana in 1886. Hutchinson had it stuffed by local Joseph Sherwood, who put it on display at his general store near Henry's Lake, Idaho, until the 1980s when it mysteriously disappeared. DNA testing has never been conducted on the animal. In 2007, Jack Kirby, grandson of the man who shot the animal, tracked it down to the Idaho Museum of Natural History in Pocatello. The specimen was displayed in the Madison Valley History Museum, where it reopened in May 2007. Over many years, the Hutchinson story was all but forgotten. That is until cryptozoologist Mark A. Hall uncovered the story after a creature of a group of creatures resembling the Shunka Warriton were sighted in Nebraska, Iowa, Alberta, and Illinois. In 1995, following discovery by Mark A. Hall, Lance Foster, Iowa Indian, told renowned cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman of a creature he and his tribe called the Shunka Warriton that looked something like a hyena and cried like a person when it was killed. Foster, who heard the mounted Rindocus carcass, speculated it may be an example of a Shunka Warriton, which he knew from his own experience as those of relatives in Montana and Idaho. In December 2005, a strange wolf-like animal began killing livestock in Macomb, Garfield, and Dawson counties of Montana. By October 2006, the animal, now known as the creature of Macomb County, had killed more than 120 various forms of livestock and appeared in several news articles, including one in May 2006 issue of USA Today. On November 2nd, 2006, the Montana Wildlife Service shot and killed a creature that may have been responsible for these killings. Originally thought to be a wolf, the animal that was shot showed characteristics that were not common with any wolf species known in the area. The animal that was killed appeared to have orange, red, and yellow fur, whereas wolves known to live in the area are of gray, black, and brown color. muscle tissues was sent to the University of California, Los Angeles, where DNA samples were taken in an attempt to compare it to Northern Rockies wolf. The carcass was sent to the National Fish and Wildlife Forensics Laboratory in Ashland, Oregon, for genetic study. However, no record or result of these studies can be found at this time. It's a messed up wolf. Let me show you some of these pictures. What are your thoughts on that?
No, it reminds me of actually a Lindros story. Like 2 years ago, shape-shifting priestess. This is a 1,000-year-old, and it's about these tigers in South Korea that can transform.
We all know real life can suck sometimes, and your boss accidentally seeing you in your underpants on Zoom last week doesn't help any.
That's why reluctantly codependent sisters, the Shira and Rashalia, keep you enthralled and in stitches every week with their podcast, Legendary Africa.
Every Monday and Friday, we take you on a journey of mythical lands, magical objects, and monstrous creatures, both ancient and modern.
Find Legendary Africa on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever you feed your ears. And remember, stay safe,
stay sexy,
and stay legendary.
But yeah, that's what I was thinking when I was hearing that. You know, stuff like that is like really cool to kind of, you know, help you write, help you. For me as a writer, help me write actually when I hear stuff like that. You know, tigers are really big in Korea, and there's a lot of mythology surrounding it.
I'm really interested in getting to like different countries and learn like their folklore about monsters. I'm really forward to looking to doing that.
Yeah, I mean it's very, very rich actually. There's a lot of like in Korea there's Guishin, which are ghosts. There's a lot of different ghost legends there. A lot of different kind of monsters, evil spirits, and things like that. I hope you make it to all the different countries. I mean, I guess I have a virus thing. I don't know. But yeah, I'll investigate those things.
Thank you. A Montana monster. It looks like a man and eats bears and sheep. Some of the old-time hunters and Indian fighters who are still holding out in the city should endeavor to find a wide-eyed individual who came in from the mountains this morning. Whether he discovered a new brand of whiskey or whether it was the loneliness of his life in the mountains that caused him to see visions and hear sounds is not known, but whatever the cause, he had told a story that Knox Joe Kelficki's ghost story attested to by Jack Furman Cully on In the Shade. He said that over in the range of mountains, which forms a part of Wallowamie line, he had seen evidence of the existence of a creature whose genius was unknown to him. He also claimed to have tamed a glimpse of the varmint, but always when he was unarmed and as its appearance was such as not to invite a close inspection, he never sought to get near it enough to see it just what it was. He says the animal is covered with hair, but in form it is not unlike a man. A resemblance that is increased by the creature's habit of rising on its haunches and walking on its hind legs after manner of a gorilla. After I have seen the animal, the man said he cannot account for the existence of the torn and carly eaten carcass of several large bears and also of one mountain sheep that he claimed to have found in the vicinity of where the unknown animal apparently makes his headquarters. The stranger says he will return to the mountain shortly and will pilot anybody who may desire to visit the locality to the exact spot where he last saw the creature. It's from the Anacon Standard. Sources Brooklyn, England, Brooklyn, New York, November 4th, 1892. That's crazy. I don't that it could be.
That also brings to my story. But yeah, man, it's pretty interesting.
I mean, what could eat a bear? Pretty huge.
yeah, what could eat a bear? I mean, I don't know. I've never really been. But like, I have a really good friend from Montana. I always wanted to go to Ronin, Montana. But I've never really spent much time in the wilderness or in the more rural areas. I have no idea what eat a bear, actually. Do you know Ronin?
Not particularly, no.
No, okay, yeah. She used to live there. I've always wanted to visit Ronin, Montana. But yeah, I don't know.
That's awesome. I'll have to visit there. I'll have to visit Montana. Her is beautiful.
Yeah.
Let's go by fast. The story of a monster in the Flat Lake originates in Kootenai traditional legend. According to the story, long ago, the first native tribe in the area lived on an island in the middle of the lake. One winter, while crossing the frozen lake to move camp, two girls saw antlers approximately 2 feet and legs protruding through the frozen ice. Thinking the antlers belonged to some animal, the girls decided to chop them off and take them. They used sharp-edged rocks to cut through the ice, and when the antlers suddenly started shaking, the ice around them split open, and the head of a monster appeared through the ice, shaking its giant antlers. The girls used their special powers to transform into a ball and a buckskin target to escape the monster. But half of the tribe drowned in the lake, which is said to be the reason why there are so few Kootenai people. The narrative holds that the new Kootenai never strayed far from the lake shore after that, and why settlers later reported occasionally seeing the monster. According to Tower newspaper editor Paul Fugelberg, local tales of the Flathead Lake Monster go back from more than 100 years. It was supposedly first reported in 1889 by Captain James C. Kerr of the Lake Steamboat U.S. Grant, who claimed that he and his 100 passengers saw an unusually large whale-like object in the water. According to the story, one of the passengers on the streamer shot at the creature and sent it diving for safety. Fugelberg notes that the local residents have named Purple Lake Monster Flessy, inspired by Lake Nessie. Temporary reports of sightings of Flessy by local residents and visitors average between 1 and 2 each year. However, in 1993 alone, there were about 13 reports. The monster is usually described as a large eel-shaped creature, round with a wavy body like a snake, 20 to 40 feet long, having brownish to blue-black skin and grayish-black eyes. It's often described as looking like a whale or giant sturgeon. According to Fugelberg, when I was editor of the Flathead Courier, I poisoned author Dorothy M. Johnson, then secretary of the Montana Press Association, advised me not to treat science reports lightly in newspapers and magazine articles. She said, quote, "I don't think the monster should be done with tongue-in-cheek. You have to have eyewitness accounts by people who were scared and didn't think it was funny," end quote. One local story that received much publicity describes how a three-year-old boy apparently fell into the lake, and when asked how he had attracted himself, told his mother, quote, "The flathead monster lifted me up," end quote. Fugelberg wrote that he claimed sightings of the monster have been blamed on hyperactive imaginations, playful pranks, natural phenomena such as wave action, shadows, lighting effects, logs, and a number of animals, including bears, horses, deer, elk, dogs, a dead monkey. Okay. What's a monkey doing in Montana? A loose circus seal. Okay. And even a skate buffalo. In the 1950s, a significant cash reward was offered by Big Fish Unlimited to anyone who would catch that was termed the Superfish of Flathead Lake. A man named C. Leslie Griffith was reported to have caught a 7'6", 181-pound, 1 ounce white sturgeon, now displayed at the Poison Flathead Historical Museum. Wow. That's crazy. Yep.
Yeah,
so
visceral. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You go ahead.
No, it's not pretty visceral. I mean, it's called Monster, yeah, but yeah, it's very visceral. A bunch of quite terrifying incidents that happened, actually.
I surprised it's a big fish.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
What's big? Got a lot of big fish in Korea?
They do. You know, I've eaten fish while it's still moving the plate, actually. It's still alive. And, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. The first time I had this happen was in Japan. And anyway, there are a lot of big fish. That's the question. But, you know, the weigher, it was me and my two friends, and he brings out this fish. And we're like, we have been drinking a little bit. And I swear, I saw it move a little bit. And I thought, no, it can't move. But yeah, it just starts moving. And you're supposed to actually, the chopsticks, you're supposed to consume it as it, like, suffocates on your plate. So there are definitely fish there. Big fish, right?
How's this sushi in Japan compared to here in America?
I mean, there's no comparison. I mean, it's so fresh. And there's these restaurants where there's a conveyor belt. They might have that in America now, too. I don't know. Yeah, you know, the sushi chef is sitting there fixing it, and it just kind of conveyor belt goes around. But, you know, I mean, like, they take the fish out of the tank and then bring it to your section. Like, it was alive a moment ago, and now it's there for you. So it's really no comparison. It's very fresh and very raw.
Sounds delicious.
It is, actually. I actually had sushi yesterday. Yeah, it's really good. It's really good. It's not expensive.
That's great. Okay. Never mind. Yeah. What's that other? I was looking at your Facebook page. You got another book series, you write?
I do. It's so I do extreme horror because, like you were saying, it's very graphic and that's just not for everyone. And then I also do fantasy, and so that's more for people and older. So yeah, I do both of those series.
What's your fantasy series about?
It's really about people who are chasing some kind of big dream. Like, that's what they are, but it can really be any kind of really big dream that only a small percentage of people ever get, and whether or not how most people actually fell along the way, and like only a very small number of people actually make it. So it's a quest fantasy, because that's, in my mind, it's basically what quests are. It's these group of people who are chasing some big thing. But it's kind of a metaphor for art, basically, trying to become a successful artist.
Sounds awesome. I should read that.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. I mean, I actually think you would enjoy the shape-shifting one, the tiger who becomes a human. I think I can actually loan that book to you, but I'll see about it. Because it's like an anthology, so it's like a bunch of other people's stuff in there too. But the shape-shifting princess, it's pretty gruesome, but I think you might enjoy it, actually.
Yeah. I definitely enjoyed Butchers. It was like really cool.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks. And the next one comes out soon. The Great Man of Smoking Shadows comes out in maybe a month or so. I'll let you know when it comes out.
Thank you. Look forward to reading it.
And I definitely want to introduce you to my publisher, because again, like what you're saying is actually what he does. He actually goes around throughout the country. They take pictures of, they go to places where there are legends of monsters or haunted houses of ghosts. They take pictures of it and they write about it. And I just think you guys would really have so much to talk about. Like, I don't know that much about this stuff, but that's literally what he does. So I'm definitely going to get you in contact with him, and I hope you guys can have a really good conversation, actually.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, email me or message me.
As soon as we're done, we'll send them. I mean, he's right in Kentucky, so you guys are in the same time zone. Not like me. Yeah.
It should be. Like, well, I don't know how to end this. Thank you for coming on the show. Well, where can people find you and your books?
Facebook, Todd Sullivan, Amazon. Amazon is the easiest way. The horror novella is called Butchers. The second one, Grey Man Smoking Shadows. The fantasy one is Hollow Men. And the second one is There Will Be One, which comes out May 1st. So in about 2 weeks. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter a lot too.
Awesome. Are you like doing any like book tours or anything like that?
No, I mean, I'm here in Taiwan, so yeah. No, it's literally not possible. But I do a lot of podcasts. Like, I want to thank you for having me. I mean, yeah,
of course.
I do a lot of podcasts, and it's always great to talk to people. Like, you know, I've talked to someone in Australia, UK, Canada, and, you know, you talk to people all over. So it's a really good experience and a really good way to promote yourself.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned me and showed me that book, because it's an awesome book. I'm really glad you came on. You're an awesome guest.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
You should come back on again and talk about the second book. Talk about your second book in series.
My publisher, I don't know, can you do three people, or can you do more than one person on Skype? Is it only a two-person minimum?
I think you do more people. I think you can.
All right, so again, I'm going to contact my publisher, and then hopefully you guys will talk, and then we'll go from there.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Monster Legend Podcast. Or to find more information about Monster Legend Podcast, go to monsterlegendpodcast.com or anchor.fm/monsterlegendpodcast. There you can find all episodes and platforms on which the podcast is on, which you can subscribe to. You also can email me with questions that will be answered on the show. Thank you.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.